Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. Before we get into the podcast today, I just want to give a big thank you to everybody that's leaving us ratings and reviews on your podcast player. Please do that and do leave us any suggestions for topics to be covered on the podcast. Very much appreciate that. So for today's podcast, we're kindly joined once more by Alan Green. Alan, thanks for being here today.
Good morning, John. Good to be back.
So just speaking before the podcast, we're coming in towards the end of the year, but both of us are very hectic at the moment. And given what's happening in the market, it looks as though many market participants are having a busier beginning to December than they may have thought this time last week before we got the first reports of the Omicron variant, Alan. And now I think that's something that we're going to have to touch on today, because it's, you know, the biggest story out there in markets at the moment. Of course, you know, if we go back a week or two, we were very much looking towards a potential rate hike, and that was the big story. Of course, inflation persists, but now with the introduction of this new variant, there is a different dimension to markets now, in that there is volatility returning to markets, particularly if you're looking at equities, if you're looking at the FTSE 100 and what that's been doing over the past three or four trading sessions, a real roller coaster ride there. But Alan, in your view, we're now in December, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Santa rally, and, you know, is there a potential for that? I mean, what would you be saying to people that are looking at this volatility? I mean, do you see it as an opportunity, or do you think this could be, you know, a real problem for investors going forward?
John, I see it as a big opportunity. We were saying beforehand about the way viruses work, and of course, viruses are ultimately programmed to survive. And if the virus kills the host, then the virus dies. So this new variant, and you know, I don't want to be cynical, but I mean, the virus doesn't just suddenly change into something else. It's evolving the whole time. So we've got Omicron, which incidentally is also an anagram for moronic, but that's another story. We've got Omicron. We've got the virus evolving the whole time. There are probably hundreds of other so-called variants out there at the moment, but in all cases, we're seeing probably the virus becoming more transmissible, i.e., more infectious, but less lethal. So, and I know somebody that's got COVID at the moment, and they're just saying they feel lousy. You know, it's a bad case of flu, you know, eight joints are aching, all the rest of it. They're getting on with stuff and getting stuff done. Ultimately, I think this is hopefully the virus evolving into something that is akin to a different form of flu that we'll experience in the winter, in the winter time, and will hopefully, as the warmer weather comes back next year, will hopefully become less of an issue. But overall, do we need to lock down? I think, you know, I have, on a personal level, you know, I will wear a mask if I go into a shop. I'll wear a mask on the train and just observe. I've observed that all the way through. So I just think it's a common sense approach. And I think, and I hope that we're in the last stages of this now. What it will mean for the economy, I believe that, you know, the announcement of the Omicron virus created an opportunity for investors to buy into the markets at a lower level. We've seen the bounce back today. We could be at the start of a Santa rally, which would be great. And then my hope is that we will see a strong drive into 2022. And we have a lot of stocks in the commodity sector that are going to be powering the new economy that really have languished over the past 6 to 8 months. And I think there are huge opportunities there for investors to look at the start of next year.
Indeed. So let's now, Alan, touch on the Santa's rally, which is quite fitting, actually. last night we received a report from Clear Capital Markets, which actually had some very interesting stats in terms of the Santa Rally statistics around it. So in December, going back over the last 22 years, there's been an average return of 1.9% from the beginning of December through to the end of December. If you're looking at that 7-day period, which some people call a Santa's Rally, just before Christmas going through to the end of December, there's about a 7-day period there. Average return over that period for the last 22 years is 0.53%. So statistically, we are set for gains in December. If you're going back and looking at the historical averages, that doesn't mean that we're definitely set for December gains this year, because there have been some Decembers out there which have had losses. But one of the main things during December is there is a period of heightened volatility around markets. Now, of course, we're coming into December on the back of the news around the variant, and we've had significant volatility beforehand. Do you think, when you're looking at the sort of timeline of how the markets digested this new news about the variant, that a lot of the volatility could have already happened in markets, Alan? And do you think we could actually now start to see a bit of a quieter December and maybe a slow grind higher from here?
Yeah, I do, John. I think you know, we've seen the FTSE, we've seen markets, not the FTSE, driven by different stocks and companies. You know, obviously in the height of the virus, it was the PPI companies and the companies developing vaccines and so on. And we're now at the point where life is returning to normal, and a lot of the stocks that have really taken a battering, you know, particularly since March 2020, could now deliver a recovery. And of course, I think what the virus has taught us is that, you know, as the world develops, we're going to see probably more of these viruses arriving and creating problems. But the way each country has dealt with it, the way the vaccine campaigns have been rolled out, I think now we understand what we need to do in order to combat it. We understand how we need to behave in order to deal with it in our day-to-day lives. And I do think that my hope is that we do avoid a lockdown. I think we will. Provided the NHS can keep on top of the cases that are being hospitalised at the moment, that's the most important thing. And what that will mean is that, you know, retailers, bars, travel companies will start to see a return to normal. It will still take a long time. They've taken a hell of a battering over the past year. But, you know, there is pent-up demand. You know, there's pent-up demand for leisure. There's pent-up demand for entertainment, pent-up demand for holidays abroad. And all of this is there waiting. The money's there waiting, ready to be spent.
Indeed. And I mean, looking at early comments from South Africa, which first discovered the variant, they're seeing cases being mild in terms of the coronavirus. And quite interestingly, an official there said that the UK should stop panicking because it's not as bad as we're making out. However, we need to see the data. We need to see more data. You know, of course, you know, the comments from people can't be taken as given. We need to see numbers and, you know, broad-based infections. But it looks as though it's not as bad as the market made out last Friday, when we saw a huge sell-off in equities and the FTSE 100. One such company on that day last week on the announcement, Alan, was EasyJet. And they actually reported yesterday. They did report a loss, not as bad as expected. But what did their full year results tell us?
Well, yeah, as you say, John, the results weren't as bad as expected. I mean, looking at the EasyJet chart now, shares are trading £5.24. And that's, you know, the all-time, well, the five-year low is down at £4.57, which was which in fact, no, there's an intraday low that was lower than that last year, just above, just below £4. So, so we're not far off the 5-year lows here. But the results that came in, the pre-tax losses weren't as bad as expected. They came in at 1.1 billion, which is still a huge amount of money. But again, in the context of company size of EasyJet, those are certainly manageable. Headline costs fell to 2.6 billion. But obviously, at the stage it announced its results, you know, some of the inherent panic around Omicron was still in the market. And, you know, that's obviously got to be assessed. So what that will mean for EasyJet is that, you know, I'd probably expect to see the shares stay depressed around this sort of level over the winter period. If there is a Santa rally, then, you know, obviously as one of the bigger players, it will benefit from that. But the first quarter of the new financial year, it's expected to see capacity taken on its flights at around 65% of pre-COVID levels. So that's still very low. But of course, if there is a sense that, or if data does confirm that the Omicron variant is what we think, it's a more infectious, less deadly version, then we can deal with it a different way. And it will mean that people can look forward to traveling again, that, you know, you get double vaxxed, you'll get your booster, and then you can get on a plane, you know, take your NHS COVID pass with you, and you can travel. The company, of course, EasyJet said it wouldn't be paying a dividend again, quite understandably. But I think you've got to look when we do get a recovery, where which companies are going to benefit first of all. And, you know, in an instant, you can get online and think, right, well, I'm going to book a flight. I'm going to go to Spain. I'm going to go to Portugal. I'm going to go to Greece. I'm going to jump on a flight. I'm going to do it because I think we're going to be okay. So I think we will see a big upswing in EasyJet's fortunes in quarter one next year. And it could be, if we do get back to normal, in inverted commas, whatever that means, if we do go back to normal next year, I think EasyJet is going to be one of the main beneficiaries in that process. And, you know, if you look at buying the shares or picking up the shares now for recovery, it's hard to see them going much lower, knowing what we now know about COVID. So they could offer a great opportunity from here. But of course, shares can go down as well as up.
Indeed. I mean, my view, just looking at their report yesterday, one of the things that jumps out at me is, you know, what they did in terms of raising capital during the pandemic when it first hit, raised a significant level of capital. And they still have, they're saying, liquidity of 4.4 billion. Most of that is cash and cash equivalent. So when you're looking at EasyJet with a market cap of 3.9 billion, it does suggest to me that if we get any good news and we start to see this pent-up demand coming through and actually seeing a rising in bookings for EasyJet, this is one that could really get going. And if we're talking about shares for recovery from COVID, this is very much up there for me. Of course, you know, the volatility that we can see, and if we get a comment coming out or some data coming out that indeed the Omicron variant is more infectious, it's a little bit, you know, it's increasing hospitalizations and impacting the death rate, expect to see EasyJet's shares go down further. But there's a lot of people that missed out on holidays last year, a lot of people that missed out on holidays this year. Going forward to next year, you'd like to think that the vaccines are then at a point and enough people have taken them that we start to see people on a wider basis going away. And EasyJet's really going to be a beneficiary of that. And given the amount of cash that they've got there, that's enough to get them through to that point, as well as building on new opportunities that they see as the holiday market develops. So an interesting one. And I think this could be an opportunity, the Omicron, for EasyJet.
I agree. And also, let's not forget, in terms of its network and slots at airports around the world, EasyJet, it's probably got the best network. So If you're looking at a company that can deliver a scalable recovery, the company's got the cash, it's got the network that it can instantly scale up and deliver very rapid growth in a very short space of time. And also, as you say, it's got cash. So there may be some other operators that come out of this and are unable to continue. So it may create some opportunities for EasyJet as the recovery takes place. May create some opportunities for EasyJet to perhaps pick up some other operators and some other networks.
Indeed, they say cash is king, and in this airline industry at the moment, there's a lot of people burning through cash, and EasyJet are well positioned. So I think that's going to do them quite well as we come out the other side of this. So moving on now, Alan, let's focus on a company operating in the gold sector. Of course, gold's been quite an interesting one over the last week. It's been used as a safe haven. It's also been falling off. There's comparisons with Bitcoin, and you know, we could speak for hours about gold and where it's where its place in the global market is at the moment. But we're going to focus on one company, Lexington Gold. We have mentioned them on the podcast previously, Alan, but they've had a number of updates since then. So what's been happening there?
Okay, so Lexington Gold, it's a nice, binary play. It's not binary, but it has assets in South Carolina. And of course, South Carolina, in terms of, as a destination for gold exploration, it's got great networks, a lot of history there. There's the Haley Gold property there. Ramarco bought the Haley Gold property in 2008, sold it to Oceana Gold for $856 million in 2015. So you've got the Ridgeway mine owned by Rio Tinto, the Barite Hill mine, and a number of others around. Lexington Gold did, it acquired a number of projects, the Jones Keystone Laughlin project, which involved historical gold mines across two regions. With decent grades already discovered and logged for that mine, the Jennings Pioneer mine discovered 1860, and that's approximately 600 meters from the Barite Hill mine I mentioned, and it's believed there's a satellite deposit there. Some very strong grades have been pulled out of the ground from there too. Also, we have the Carolina Bell Mine, and that combines several historical mining areas, the Iola and Uwara mining areas, and the Argo project, which is a drill-ready project, again, where decent grades have been taken out of the ground. So over the past year, the company has engaged in developing its flown aeromag surveys and electronic magnet surveys across the territories, and in May undertook drilling at the JKL, that's the Jones Keystone Laughlin mine. At the half year report in September, it announced it had completed 5,000 meters of reverse circulation drilling at Jones Keystone Laughlin, and six holes that are drilled had found gold mineralization of over 1 gram per ton above 100 meters. Going forward, the company reported a cash balance of $2.1 million. So the company is well funded. It plans to develop and complete a mineral resource estimate for the Laughlin project in the coming weeks, following a survey undertaken by Pivot Mining, and it's announced this morning that the Carolina Bell drilling campaign has been completed with 32 holes. The samples that it's pulled out of the ground, the rock chip samples, have got good visual indicators of the presence of gold, and it sent those 738 samples in all. It sent those samples to SGS Canada for analysis. So given that COVID has created delays in getting samples back from these labs, it may take a little bit of time for those to come back, but nonetheless, great progress across all projects, and we expect to see further developments at Carolina Bell and JKL early in 2022.
Alan always like to ask this question when there's a company that has a number of assets and operations ongoing. I mean, which of those that you've just outlined there excites you the most?
Well, I think JKL and Carolina Bell. I mean, we've got to be, you know, there are historical workings at all of them, but certainly in terms of progress, the company identified these two projects as the key projects to and they're furthest down the road. So if we get some good numbers back from Carolina Bell from the rock chip samples there, that's going to sort of moving on to the next stage. You know, let's not forget we've got the it's in an historical mining area. The Iola mine there, there were 45,000 ounces of gold. Uwara 5,000 ounces. So very strong grades historically pulled out of those mines at 10 grams per ton. And obviously, you know, given the strength of gold now, and what are we now, just under $1,800 an ounce. You know, there's a very strong case for developing that and you know, undertaking further work there to see the extent of the workings. And that's the great thing with modern mining technology. You can now look at these old historical workings. So the workers went so far but didn't have the tools or the survey equipment to see if it extended any further. We can now do that. And so many dormant projects are now coming back to life because of that. And that's what makes the whole mining and exploration scene so exciting.
Indeed, indeed. I mean, just before we move on, Alan, are you $1,800? Are you bullish on gold from here?
Yeah, we've seen it consolidate. I think it's just been a period of consolidation for gold. And, you know, certainly the fortunes of the gold explorers have been largely reflected in the price. But yeah, I am bullish. Gold is always in demand, and I think also, it's part of the new energy and technology industry, as well as being a safe haven for investors. And I'm sure, you know, I mean, you know, God forbid if the Omicron virus does prove to be more potent and difficult to deal with, then, you know, that in itself could drive a further recovery in gold, perhaps back up to over $2,000 a ton. But, you know, gold isn't being bought up by governments around the world for no reason at all. You know, it's there because it's an asset of safety. It's a tangible, it has tangible value, and it's a great store of value for both individuals and for governments around the world.
Fantastic. So let's touch on the last company that we're going to look at today, Alan. Now, it's ECR Minerals, one that regular listeners to the podcast will be familiar with, and their pipeline of projects and assets that they're working on. What's the latest updates from ECR, Alan?
Okay, well, listeners will know, of course, about the sad and untimely death of the chief executive, Craig Brown, a few weeks ago. And I've worked with Craig since 2017 in one way and another. You know, his death came as a shock because he was a mercurial character and drove the company from the front, and just had a unique view on the assets that ECR has. Nonetheless, now he has gone, and the team, obviously David Tang, the chairman, Trevor Davenport and Adam Jones, the directors, and also other key members of staff at ECR are moving the company forward. And despite Craig's sad death, the company's flagship assets, which of course based in Victoria in Australia and the Victoria Goldfields, work is continuing apace. The company raised £2 million earlier this year, and it's got plenty of cash in the bank. But part of the issue with the Victoria Goldfields is that because of the fertile nature of the region, a lot of landowners there are not necessarily making it difficult, but they are charging mining companies huge amounts of money, and, you know, in some cases being downright unreasonable about allowing access to land. So with the cash in the company, Craig took the view that the best way to do it was to take advantage of a buoyant property market and to buy properties strategically within the license areas. So they have a property, a near 300-acre property in Bayliston, close to the Cherry Tree and HR3 prospects. In the Creswick project, they have the Springmount Lane a property, which is right on top of the assets that Adam Jones, the geologist, was talking about, the mineral shoots that they discovered there. And also, in terms of the operational hub at Bendigo, where the core logging and a lot of the infrastructural and administration work takes place, that's being moved to a property they bought at Sebastian, which also has a number of has the opportunity to develop a number of buildings and assets on the land there too. So so that's very much progressing. But in terms of moving the assets forward, drilling was undertaken at the HR3 assets, and there's some complex geology in the area that Adam Jones explained to me in an interview last week, and shareholders will probably have seen that interview by now. But certainly the whole 009 HR3 produced 28 grams per ton of gold across a 0.7 meter sample at 52 meters down, and the drilling work that's been undertaken has been undertaken at various angles to understand the folding geology. And Chairman David Tang said, you know, that as a result of what the team had done, the understanding of what they call the Maori anticline there is growing rapidly. So there are many more assay results due to come. The teams are drilling down there and are pulling core samples out of the ground, and there is a big backlog of core sample work to report on. So we're expecting a lot more news in the run-up to Christmas and, of course, in the new year, both from HR3, Bayliston, and, of course, Creswick. The company also has assets an asset in Northern Australia and Queensland, owned by subsidiary Lux Exploration, which is near to it's a prolific mine for gold production. Also, this is in the Lulworth Range area, which is some 200 kilometers in land. So that will be the permissions are being awaited for there as we go forward. There is also an asset in the Philippines, and there's progress with that too. So there's an awful lot of news that I think will be upcoming in the coming weeks and months. But certainly, you know, ECR share price has suffered with the general malaise in the markets, and I mean the shares have now come back. You know, this is a company with about 3 million quid in the bank, and these assets, you know, late stage development assets being drilled, and the company's now worth just 11.2 million. So you know, little more than Lexington Gold, but with a lot more money in the bank, and also a great deal more progress in terms of developing the key assets. So it looks very good value at this level, and hopefully if we see this Santa rally and upswing next year, then ECR will be part of that rise.
Yes, very sad news about the CEO, but from what you've outlined there, it looks as though he's laid very strong foundations for the incoming CEO and chairman to take the business forward there, Alan. And I'm sure it's one that we're going to be discussing on the podcast again when we get further updates on ECR. So a recap of the equities that we discussed today. First of all was EasyJet, trading under the ticker of EZJ. After that was Lexington Gold with a ticker of LEX. And just then was ECR Minerals, which of course has a ticker of ECR. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thanks very much, John.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player.
The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.